You're listening to TFM.
Want to join in the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode? Join the Babel Conference, our listeners' discussion group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field, and we'll look forward to seeing you there.
Hey, everyone. I'm Rod Roddenberry, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Taking all these books?
I thought I'd take some light reading, in case I got bored.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Literary Treks. My name is Jonathan Cohn, and today, of course, as always, I'm joined by Casey Pettit. Casey, great to talk with you.
Yes, I feel like we've just done this.
Because we did. But you haven't heard it yet. You haven't heard it yet, the audience.
It's in the future. We recorded the future.
Let's just say you're going to get two very close together episodes.
What?
But before we talk about that, let's talk about how you can contact us. You can find all of our shows by going to our website, trek.fm. You can follow us on X and Instagram, at trek.fm. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/trek.fm. And while you're there, join our listeners-only group, the Babel Conference. Just go to the Facebook search field and type in B-A-B-E-L, and it should just come right up. We also have a dedicated Goodreads group for Literary Treks. Join us there, and you can see the books we've read and even what's coming up next. If you'd like to support the network, please go to patreon.com/trekfm, where you can select from any number of tiers. And if you have a show you really enjoy, you can be an associate producer like Casey Pettit and Greg Rozier are for Literary Treks. Lastly, please leave us a star rating and a written review wherever you get your podcasts. It's great for us and also helps others find the show.
Yes, and we actually have no news today. We are going to not talk about any comics or anything because we have a very exciting episode. It's Literary Treks adjacent. We're going to be talking about the Star Trek Con scripted podcast series with none other than the authors themselves, Kirsten Beyer and David Mack. So I have no good transition to get us into it. I have no good puns or anything today, even.
You just can't think of one.
Oh, no. I mean, yes. Well, we have got an exciting show today. We are going to be talking about the new Star Trek Con scripted podcast, and we are joined, we're so lucky to be joined by the authors of this series, and by Kirsten Beyer and David Mack. Welcome, Kirsten and David.
Hello.
Well, welcome back to both of you. I think this is probably the first time we've had both of you on at the same time on Literary Treks.
I think it might be our first joint interview ever.
It might be.
Oh. Was this your first joint project that the two of you have worked on, like, together?
No. We've worked on a lot of things together, but it's the first thing that we've written together that has, like, come out like this.
Like co-authored.
That has our names on it that's actually been made, yes.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, yeah, I think so first time for that, first time, you know, for a scripted podcast. I guess the first question that I've really got is, you know, we've known about this Con series since I think 2022 when Nicholas Meyer announced it, and at that point I believe it was going to be like a TV miniseries or something to that effect. I guess could you kind of talk about like how it kind of progressed from that to your guys's involvement, and then, you know, how we landed on the podcast format for this?
Well, I think the rumors that were coming out about it being a series were actually from like 2017 2018, like in there. And I think when he did the announcement on Star Trek Day that it was announced that it would be an audio series.
Yeah, okay.
Because from that point on it always was.
Gotcha.
So it was probably a year and a half after he started working on it that Secret Hideout reached out to me And I, like, within 20 minutes, reached out to David Mack and was like, hey, guess what we're going to be doing for the next 2 years of our lives.
And I was
very, very, very happy. He said, okay.
I believe it was more enthusiastic than that. I thought it was more of a sign me up, coach.
It might have been. There were days in the early days where we
in the early days, yes.
Yeah. Remember?
Well, and you know, Kirsten, you had the Picard No Man's Land audiobook come out a couple of years ago now, I guess. And you know, so how was this experience writing a script for the podcast, you know, different from that, or was it kind of a similar process?
The writing of it is similar. The structural stuff was very different because No Man's Land was always sort of conceived as like a movie. It was like going to be, I think it ended up being like an hour and a half, an hour and 45 minutes. So it was always just meant to be one story, three acts, beginning, middle, end, and there you go. This was always going to be 9 episodes. So there was a lot of structural work to be done to figure out. It's essentially no different from writing a TV series when you've got 9 or 10 episodes or whatever. You sort of like know the story's beginning, middle, and end, and you don't quite know how you're going to get there, but you figure it out as you go. But you know, the writing for audio is quite different from writing for screen because you have that one very critical sense of being able to see stuff taken away from you. So you have to approach it very differently as you're writing it.
And you've each worked with CBS and Secret Hideout in various capacities. Was there a lot of collaboration with them as well, or was this more just independent, the two of you writing?
So there was a whole team that consisted of Secret Hideout and CBS and CBS's pod group and CBS's consumer products or brand management, I guess it's called now. So there were a bunch of folks on that end who, as the scripts were completed, received them and gave notes on them. And also Realm at that point was also involved. Fred was always on those calls and those meetings. So there was a great deal of involvement after we had written or started writing, and then all the way through production and then post-production. Yeah.
By the time you guys got involved then, you know, if this had been kind of started in some way since 2017, were you given kind of a story treatment for this, or, you know, like how did that writing process work going from Nicholas Meyer to then bringing you guys in and, you know, coming out with the finished product?
Well, we had 9 scripts that were sort of in process that were Nick's, and he had worked also with a guy from Realm, or a guy that Realm had brought in named Mac Rogers, on the last version of those. And so I had an original set of scripts from Nick and then a set that was Nick and Mac. And I read all of those, and then I sent all of those to David. And then we started talking about what was there and what was going to have to be sort of reimagined and changed.
But at the same time, we had to think about what had to be preserved.
Yes.
We had certain requests from various stakeholders because a lot of people creatively had a stake in this. And we had to respect certain elements that we were told were essential to Nick's vision. So to remain true to what he intended, we had to preserve certain elements. And then as we rebuilt, we had to incorporate them, work, you know, shape stories to fit them with the new narrative we wanted to create. But yeah, there were pieces that we preserved, and then there were pieces we introduced.
Yeah. And once we had an idea of what both of those things were, we started the part in the process where Nick and I would sit down together every morning for an hour or so for several months and talk through episode by episode what he had and what we wanted to do and try to find a way to sort of marry those things. And then once Nick and I had come to some sort of agreement or understanding, I would sit down with David and then we would do the story breaks together and then he would do the writer's drafts.
Man, so very, very collaborative.
Yes.
Through the whole time.
Yep.
Yeah. We would sometimes spend 4 to 5 hours doing an episode break where we would just sit down and we would discuss the character arcs, the overall episode arc, the theme, discussing bits and pieces that we knew we wanted to have in there, talking about what order we were going to present it in, talking about ways that we thought it could be made to work in an auditory storytelling medium as opposed to a visual medium. So we would, you know, talk for hours doing these break sessions, and we had a virtual whiteboard, you know, index card system online that we shared access to. And so we would fill out these index cards, and then from these we would output story documents that we would each have, you know, for reference. But yeah, it was very collaborative. You know, we would just work for hours, you know, by you know, call, you know, with speakers' phones on, and even across the continent, we would, you know, hash these stories out.
Usually fairly late at night.
Usually we'd start around like, you know, 10 or 11 at night and go till 1 in the morning.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
I can't imagine doing that. It's a long time to sit on your phone.
Well, it's a necessity because of her schedule. She's very busy on all the various shows at Secret Hideout. And by the time she gets home from that, you know, after commuting in LA, and then she has obligations to her family at home that have to be dealt with. And by the time she's finally free, you know, it's like, you know, 8 or 9 o'clock her time, which is 11 o'clock midnight my time in New York. And so I had to be flexible and be available at those hours because, fortunately for both of us, I'm a nighthawk. I'm usually up till 4 a.m. So for me, being on a story call with Kirsten from, say, 11 p.m. to 1 or 2, grueling as it is, it doesn't really affect my schedule very much. So it was fortunate in that respect.
Yeah. Nice.
You guys able to catch up on sleep after this?
No.
So this project, it's released in a new way that we haven't really seen before. We've done, you know, we had the audio drama, which was released through like Audible with No Man's Land. But this one is released as a podcast in quite a lot of places. How did the decision to make it a podcast in 9 episodes as opposed to, a more traditional release work?
I mean, that decision was made before I was brought on. So... because there, I think that, you know, the idea of Star Trek podcasts existing as a thing, you know, audio drama podcasts, not just like, you know, podcasts about Star Trek and interviewing, you know, actors and creators and stuff. Once that decision was made, they sort of assigned a whole part of, you know, the team to begin figuring that out. I think the probably the reason why No Man's Land was an Audible is because it was done by Simon & Schuster. Like they had a license to do an audio drama format that they contacted me about a couple of years before we were even able to start working on it. And then that's how the Star Trek Picard one became the first one that Simon & Schuster did, and so far the last. But yeah,
I mean, it's kind of nice getting different formats and getting the ability to expose people to these types of stories without either having to pay for something if, you know, it's not in somebody's budget, or, you know, if they're not subscribing to Paramount Plus for some reason, you know, and then they can still be able to get stories from the current creators of Star Trek, you know, in this format. And it's, you know, free for, you know, people on their podcast platforms pretty much everywhere, right? I mean, it's Apple and Spotify and
YouTube.
Yeah.
Yeah, in fact, I was actually listening to them on YouTube and reading the transcript. As it goes by, it's like an AI one, so it's not super great, but it's kind of fun to read along.
Does the transcript, because I haven't seen this, does the transcript have character names, or does it just have?
It did on the first episode. No, the second episode did not, It might have. I don't know if that was just because I was listening to it, I think, the day it came out, and so it was probably pretty fresh, and maybe I listened to the first episode, you know, several days later. So I don't know if the AI caught up or what, but it was pretty interesting on the first one. It was written almost like a script, except just without like the, you know, cues, like sound cues and everything like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So lots of different ways for people to ingest this. Speaking of that, I guess too, like what kind of involvement did each of you have in, I guess the production of it, like, whether it's casting or, you know, being there with recording or, I don't know, like kind of all that stuff. Because, I mean, the whole thing is just, it's pretty, you know, fantastically produced with sound and music. You got star power in the voice actors. You know, did you get say in this or how, you know, how did that process work for your guys' perspective?
I had nothing to do with it.
Fair enough.
Yeah, I did. Because David had very generously agreed to, you know, to do the writing and to do the drafts, the writer's drafts for me. But from that point on, it was sort of me with all of the nice folks. And
after that, I was useless to her.
No, he wasn't useless. I just sort of remember being like, I'm done. And I'm like, okay, that's fine. That's fine. But yeah, so I was involved in the casting and I was involved in, I was in all of the recording sessions, working with the director and with the actors and all of the, you know, post-production, all of the cuts going through and, you know, dealing with all of the changes that had to happen and all of that. So, yeah.
Nice.
So it being a Khan storyline, it's set with his time on City Alpha 5, but this is not the first time we've ever had a story with City Alpha 5, because we know that like Greg Cox wrote a trilogy about Khan, one of which takes place on that. So did you guys look to that as any inspiration, or were you trying to do something completely and wholly original, or are there Easter eggs to that? How did y'all approach that?
I feel like I read maybe one or two of them a very, very long time ago. But okay. I think the fact of the matter was, because we already had a lot of sort of obligations to story that were brought to us by Nick, that's what we were dealing with. We weren't going to, you know, that and canon. Right. That and Space Seed and Khan. We weren't going to be creating from anything else. They're just it wouldn't have served us very well, I don't think.
There was really no room to try and work in those kind of Easter eggs. We just had to be focused on this story, the story that Nick wanted to tell, and then finding the best way to bring that to life.
You know, one of the things that I was, as I've only listened to the first two episodes so far, but the it feels very much like the original series era, kind of a little bit Shakespearean in the way they're talking, especially Khan. I just feel like you guys really did a good job of capturing that character and his voice. And, you know, were you, did you kind of go back and watch some of those episodes or watch Star Trek II or, you know, anything like that as far as like to really capture the voices and the kind of cadence and pacing of the dialogue?
Absolutely.
I think we were really focused more on the Khan of Space Seed than the Khan of Wrath, especially in those early episodes, because that was the whole sort of trick of this thing, that you look at it and you realize that Khan is not the same person in Space Seed that he is in Wrath at all. And the question becomes, how did he get there? And so, you know, it's good that you feel like the first few episodes, which are closer to Space Seed than, you know, some of the rest of it as we go on, that they echo that and they resonate with that for you, because that was definitely the goal.
Naveen Andrews is, you know, plays Khan. And again, just with these first couple episodes hearing it, it's definitely a new take on the character of Khan. We've had Ricardo Montalban, obviously, in Space Seed and Wrath of Khan. And then we had Benedict Cumberbatch in the Kelvin timeline movie Into Darkness. And so now we got Naveen coming in and, you know, putting his spin on Khan. And I also noticed, is he doing just his normal, just British accent?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. And I knew he was British, but I've heard him do accents before. So I thought, you know, that was interesting. And I kind of actually appreciate that he's not trying to do a impersonation, I guess, of Montalban here. But he still feels like Khan. So, I mean, I guess there's no question here. It's just more of a kudos to him to you guys in the writing there. Because I just feel like he's captured that. And again, from the writing, the passion in his voice and as he's, you know, going through this turmoil and trying to lead these people.
Well, I mean, we were very clear from the beginning, you know, that we weren't doing an imitation in any way for any of these characters. The actors really had to and wanted very much to just sort of make it their own, although they all did their homework and looked at the original materials and all of that. But I remember the first day that we recorded with Naveen wondering myself, like, you know, how's this going to go exactly? And I mean, within the first couple of pages, I was like, oh, that's Khan. Yeah, we're done. It's fine.
Yeah.
It's fine.
Awesome.
When you recorded with the actors, did they do it individually or were you able to get them all together for the recordings?
No, sadly, they all had to do it individually. Gotcha. It was a scheduling thing. And it's also pretty standard for these sort of projects now, which amazes me because, you know, I started out in this life as an actor and the idea of not being able to hear or know what the other people were doing would be sort of terrifying. But when we did some of the retakes after the first round of cuts, there were times when we were able to play some of the other, you know, characters for the people who were recording so they could hear what they were responding to. And that was always really exciting because they were like, oh, now I get it. Okay, I see. And then, you know, they would redo it for us. So there's some of that.
So I was very excited when I saw the cast list and saw that Ren Schmidt was going to be playing Marla MacGyver because she was terrific in For All Mankind. Was that what influenced you guys to choose her? Or was she a surprise in the casting process?
There were several actresses that we were considering. And it's just like anything else. You sort of don't necessarily know what you're listening for, but you know it when you hear it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they all submitted reels and Ren's reel for me, just the level of complexity and nuance that she brings to everything she does was so apparent. And I felt so essential to Marla. It wasn't a hard choice.
Star Trek is really known for kind of morals and, you know, messages in the show and kind of really touching on usually current events, but, you know, just things going on in the world. And I guess as you guys were writing this and looking at what Nick had provided in his vision, I guess kind of the big question is, what are you hoping people get out of this series? And, you know, are there some morals we should look out for? Like, you know, so we watch the progression of Khan from, you know, his Spacey days to his Wrath of Khan days. You know, what are you hoping that people get out of this series?
Unfortunately, the one thing I want to mention is sort of spoilerific. So I have to put a lid on that.
Okay.
Because there are going to be some fun developments coming in the next few episodes. And without spoiling what they are or what they relate to, I think that viewers who are keenly attuned to modern, you know, political current events are going to see some issues that are at the forefront in our society today are going to be mirrored in a certain way by the events that are going to transpire in the next few episodes of Khan.
For sure. And, you know, we were writing this 2 years ago. Like, it's always strange how you don't necessarily know you're doing it at the time. And then it comes out and you're like, yeah, this was all, I mean, yeah, there have been a couple of moments where I've just been like, oh my God, there's a bit at the end that obviously I can't spoil for you, but, you know, we wrote it. We hadn't recorded it yet. And then certain events happened in our recent history. And I went back and reread it and I was like, that's what I was writing about. And I had no idea because it hadn't happened yet, but there it is. It was freaking wild. But I think for me, the thing that I really hope that people take from this is sort of a different appreciation for who it is that we think of and how we think of villains. I think there's a lot of people who sort of come to this or may come to this with the idea that, well, we already know he's a bad guy. Like, what else do we need to know? He's a mass murderer. Like, why are we even telling this story, you know? And for me, and this has been true of all of my writing, but particularly of this, I don't think of villains as one thing or two things, you know? I think of them as people who want things very badly and tend to, you know, those wants and needs tend to come in conflict with, you know, oftentimes the people we think of as our heroes. But they don't sit around going, I'm a bad person and I'm going to do bad things today. You know, they're people just like us. And that question of what are the lines inside of us that get crossed and blurred as we go through life and as we experience things that can sort of take us to one side or the other of that, where we can find ourselves able to justify choices and actions and behaviors that maybe at one time would have seemed unthinkable. but become sort of the only option for us. And how do we get there? And that's where Khan is such a great and beautiful character to be able to walk through something like this. Because, you know, if you begin from the premise that, you know, what he wanted for himself and for the world was a net positive, just because history remembers him in a certain way doesn't mean that that's what he was shooting for, right?
Yeah, yeah, I mean, he's, because he even starts off on, in the first episode as he's not thrilled with having to be on SETI Alpha 5, but he's going to try to make the best of it. And, you know, you can almost see in that first episode that Khan could be a good guy, mm-hmm. you know, given the right, given the right situation.
Yeah.
I found myself wanting him to succeed because I was like, I want to see them build a civilization on SETI Alpha 5.
Yeah.
And then it goes along and I'm like, yeah, maybe not.
Well, I mean, it's interesting to imagine what he might have accomplished on SETI Alpha 5 without having to fight a war against entrenched powers, against an entrenched status quo, mm-hmm. where he's got his followers who are going to do pretty much what he wants and accept him as the leader. He's in a position to set the foundation for a civilization, to begin, you know, the creation of a new world. And who knows how that might have worked out. It might have turned out that he was the benevolent dictator he always wanted to be, because the way he treats members of his in-group, other augments like himself and the descendants of augments, may be very different from the way that he treated humans who were not augmented on Earth. And this is just human psychology. We tend to have one way of interacting with people we regard as our in-group, our tribal group, and then a less welcoming attitude toward members of what we consider our out-group. And so here he is with his in-group and only them. It would make sense that he would take on a different governing style and a different interacting style, trying to establish himself and his place in their posterity, building this new civilization. So he, if he feels a little different from, say, the tyrant that's described in Space Seed, well, it's because he's changing his mode to fit his new circumstances.
And also he's being described by his enemies. So,
yeah, exactly. You know,
I think their point of view is pretty important to consider. There's a thing, it's interesting because there's some commentary that I've been hearing as people have been listening to the first few episodes about, you know, well, isn't it canon that the augments always fought amongst themselves? So surely these guys are going to rise up and fight him and like whatever. And I'm like, well, my understanding of the canon is what little we know about that period is that there were several augments who took over different parts of the world. Mm-hmm. And they fought, the leaders fought amongst themselves once they had sort of like solidified their kingdoms, as it were. But you have to imagine that the people who followed them were incredibly loyal to them. Yeah. And those would have been the people that Khan put on the Botany Bay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He doesn't have saved any.
Yeah, probably not. I mean, yeah. Hugo was probably a little bit of a tough call, but obviously he felt that there were strengths there that he was desperately going to need. So, yeah. You know, he chose to bring him along and felt like he could manage him, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I don't want to get too much into whether this story is canon or not, because I do feel like history will decide that. But, you know, you guys have both, you know, obviously kind of walked both sides of, you know, being, you know, working with CBS and Secret Hideout on the different Star Trek television projects, but also writing the tie-in fiction with Simon & Schuster. And do you approach this type of work differently from that? I mean, this one, in some ways, you could say that you are, I said I wasn't going to do it, but I'm going to say creating canon here a little bit, to some extent, versus with tie-in fiction, you got to, you know, put the toys back in the box, as they say. You know, how does this differ from writing for, you know, tie-in fiction?
Not terribly. I mean, in the end, we're just trying to tell a good story about characters that we're familiar with and we know the audience is familiar with. We still had to go through a process of approvals from various stakeholders, in this case, CBS, Secret Hideout, Nick. We had to balance those different concerns and different viewpoints until we found something creatively that we could all agree on. So just like in writing tie-ins, there is a process of give and take, a process where we don't have 100% control. We have to accept that we are in partnership. We are in creative collaboration with other parties. And that's true whether you're working in a writer's room or whether you're working on tie-ins. In the end, you have to be able to amend your vision or what you think your vision is, because other people get a say too when it's a shared universe like this. So for me, creatively, it felt very similar to either side of the equation. And in the end, it's not about whether we're creating canon or not creating canon. It's, are we telling a good story?
Hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, when I write tie-ins, I'm following canon as closely as I can.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter how far away I am from what might exist as canon. Every choice I make, I feel like has to be grounded in something that is already true of the characters from canon as it was given to us. So, yes. And that's true when I'm working on a tie-in. I mean, I remember in my earliest days, in my first books, the editors were very, very strict about that. You know, they were like, nope, you gotta do this, gotta do that. Okay. And that's where I sort of like learned it all. So I approach the TV stuff and this with the exact same intention.
I like that. I mean, that's kind of what we even talk about sometimes. Like the best tie-in fiction just feels like it slots right in with the TV shows or the movies or whatever it's based on, and expands those stories that we already, love watching. So,
The rigor of continuity that Kirsten brings to her books was definitely in play here. Mm-hmm. When we were doing story development, we were double checking, triple checking our facts, checking chronology. We were going back and replaying scenes from episodes, going back to the movie and looking, parsing every line of dialogue word for word to make certain we weren't contradicting this point or that point. There is a level of rigor that has to come into it. And I would like to think that we observed and upheld that level of rigor.
We certainly tried.
We tried. We did our best.
Yeah.
Well, that's why we appreciate, when we see your guys' names on these types of projects, we appreciate it all the more because we know how much, love and respect that you guys have for Star Trek and, how much you're going to pay attention to everything. So,
and there's also the fact that if you don't, you're very likely going to create story points that just will take your listener out of the story. Most of the people who are going to come to this are going to be really, really deep Star Trek fans with a lot of knowledge about it. And you don't want them to miss something because they get hung up on something. You go, wait a minute, that doesn't fit with what I, And then you've lost them for however long it takes their brain to sort that out. Yep. And that's just not good storytelling.
So now the question is, are we going to see Chekhov in the story?
No comment.
Yeah. I think I read somewhere from probably another interview, this is a pretty closed-ended story. Like, this takes us right into Star Trek II. Is that correct? We're coming right up to Terrell and Chekhov showing up on SETI Alpha 5.
Here's how I will put it. Okay. By the end of this story, you will understand why Khan is the man that you saw in Wrath of Khan.
Mm-hmm.
You know everything you need to know to get you there.
Yes.
So we don't need to revisit SETI Alpha 5 in a season 2 or anything.
No.
So this is a story that does what it intends to do in 9 episodes. It is a contained narrative.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
This may not get a season 2 and be contained, but do you know, can you tell us if there's been discussions of future scripted podcasts, or is this more of a test subject to see how it does?
I'm sure it was originally intended as a test. I can say already, yes, there are discussions about more.
Oh, good.
Yeah. Nice. Well, this is a really fun format. I mean, it's almost surprising to me that Star Trek took this long to get here with, so many other scripted type podcasts out there. But yeah, that'll be exciting to have more like this, because we all Jonathan and I talk all the time. We always want more Star Trek. We want more books. We want more shows. We want it all. So, keep them coming.
Well, I hope they'll let me pitch because I've got ideas.
There you go.
I know a guy. <There you go. laughs> You hook me up. He's going to be in the back of a truck. It's going to be in an alley.
Yeah.
You bring cash. You put it in a paper bag. I know.
As we wrap up here, is there anything that you want people to know about this, or is there a question that with the interviews you've done with this, or questions that people have asked you? Is there something you wish other people would ask you that you just are dying for people to know? Besides the ending.
I mean, as I think about when we were first starting working on it in those early days, I remember one of our creative touchstones, although we ended up drifting away from it, was King Lear. We were talking a lot about Lear, about an old king, the idea of a king who has a tragic flaw, a martyr flaw, that is exposed by his circumstances. And although the different flaw, though the flaw that is inherent in Khan is not the same one as in Lear, and it doesn't play out the same way, it was an interesting jumping off point.
Oh, that's fascinating. Now I need to go read King Lear. Awesome. Well, we really appreciate you guys coming on here, and just kind of, I guess, want to give you both an opportunity. Kirsten, we'll start with you. Tell people where they can find you, what you're working on. I mean, obviously you're working with CBS and Secret Hideout on a bunch, but, how can people learn about everything in the world of Kirsten Beyer?
I'm they terrible.
Can't. At they can't.
They can't. I don't have a website. I don't have a. Yeah.
She doesn't want to be found, guys.
I don't. I'm not really on social media. I do look at it, from time to time. But I found a long time ago, honestly, that just like in the early days of the message boards and stuff when I was writing the novels, that it could become a full time job. Answering people's questions and trying to sort of like dig into that, and those hours just don't exist in the day anymore. So. I will say right now, I am finishing up my work on season 2 of Starfleet Academy.
Nice.
And have a little bit of a breather now for maybe a few weeks before whatever is coming next, which I can't talk about any of it yet. Aww. So, yeah, I'm sorry. I'm going to fail you utterly.
No, we will just look forward to more.
All right, David, the ball's in your court now.
Well, what I have coming up next in just a few weeks is a Star Trek Strange New Worlds novel called Ring of Fire. Pretty straightforward thriller, murder and sabotage aboard a civilian science station. The Enterprise crew has to get involved, and then you find out that there are old personal secrets and yada, yada, yada involving Pike and the person who runs the station and yada, yada, yada. Fun time for all. There's tragedy. There's mystery. There's banter, but there's action. It's got everything. So there's that. I'm waiting on a contract for a new book that I can't talk about yet, but which I'm hoping will be talked about next year. You can find me online at my website, davidmack.pro. That's David Mack, MACK.PRO. That's got my list of my books that are out, books that are coming up, all my latest titles, yada, yada, yada. And if you want to find me yammering about politics or something online, you can find me at Blue Sky at David Mack.
Nice. Well, yeah, once again, thank you both for taking the time and talking with us today. It's a little different from what we normally talk about with the books here on this podcast, but it's adjacent, and you're a couple of our favorite Star Trek authors. So, thank you so much for being here today.
That's very kind of you. Thank you.
Yeah, it's our pleasure. It's always great to talk to you guys.
Well, that was a fun time getting to talk to those two. I can't believe, all the interviews we've done on literary treks, we've had two authors on at a time before, but never Kirsten and David together, because they've never co-authored something with both their names on it, or at least not, just the two of them. I know they've worked on the extended universe together and all that kind of stuff, or whatever we call that in Star Trek land. But yeah, what a great time to, I'm glad that they could both join us from each side of the country, as you and I are both as well.
Yeah. And we will be talking to David again soon, once his book Ring of Fire comes out. But that is not going to be our next episode. Our next episode is going to be our review of the final Gateways novel. We have been working on this series for so long, and we have finally recorded the final episode of our discussion, where we will talk about not only the end of the Gateway saga, but we will also talk about the end of the Lore War.
Yes, in the comics. So that will be a good... I think it'll be, because I know, because we've already recorded the future. I think we had a really, really good discussion on that. And so I'm looking forward to people hearing that and hearing what people think. And if you follow us on Goodreads, you already know how we how much we enjoyed the book. But yes, definitely tune in for that one. We'll cover that before we get into David's new book.
Well, Casey, where can people find you online?
You can find me pretty much just on Goodreads and Letterboxd at Knitting Trekkie. Like Kirsten, I have a hard time just doing anything online. So, but then you can also find me on Facebook, poking around in the Babel Conference and other Star Trek book groups. And Jonathan, when you're not listening to these crazy podcasts with all sorts of music and special effects and fun times and being stranded on a desert planet, future desert planet, where can people find you?
You can find me on YouTube at Jonathan Cohn. You can find my Twitter account at Jonathan Cohn. And you can find my Goodreads account at Jonathan Cohn.
Easy enough.
Mm-hmm. So thank you, everyone, for listening. And until next time, live long
and read on.
What do you call that, light reading?
To each his own, number one.
Jonathan!
Oh.